What's going on, all you constellations out there in the multiverse? You're listening to the Earth 16 Comics Wire podcast. I'm your host, Brian Verd 16, and in this episode, I'm going to be speaking with Patrick Lugo on his comic, A Tiger's Tale. You don't want to miss this, folks. What's going on, all you constellations out there in the multiverse? You're listening to the Earth 16 Comics Wire podcast. My name is Brian Verd 16, or I'm your host, Brian Verd 16, and my guest for today is Patrick Lugo, the creator of A Tiger's Tale. How's it going, Patrick?
It's going well, Brian. Glad to be here.
Well, yeah, thanks for coming, man. So we're going to get into your latest project, which is A Tiger's Tale, Secrets from the Kung Fu Forest. And according to, I'm looking at the website right now, according to this, A Tiger's Tale is a graphic novel in the grand tradition of A Journey to the West, Usagi Yojimbo, and Avatar the Last Airbender. I have to say, those are all good anime, or not anime, but good shows. I mean, Usagi Yojimbo actually was a comic, but it appeared live action in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That's right. And I understand that there's a Netflix animated series in the works, which sounds amazing.
Oh, there is? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I remember seeing a headline for that. And maybe it was concept art, or could have been fan art that, you know, was used as concept art. But, you know, fingers crossed, because wouldn't that be great, right?
That would be awesome. And actually, I remember a couple years ago that I actually got into Usagi Yojimbo. I didn't even know about him. And when I read that comic, I was like, this comic is really amazing. The storyline behind how he became a samurai. And, you know, he was just this poor bunny, you know, like this poor rabbit wanting to, you know, be a samurai. And then, like, he meets, like, this lion master, I think, and just, like, puts him through this rigorous training, and it's a really awesome story.
Oh yeah, and it's such a, you know, such a success in terms of springing out of that time period of martial arts animals that were hitting indie comics in the 80s, and how Stan Sakai just took it and just went 110%, you know, researching the minutiae of the Japanese tea ceremony and samurai culture, and just really conveying, you know, these deep teachings in a comic. And I think that's something that I've really been striving to kind of emulate, you know, and see him do that and be like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to do something like that for Kung Fu?
Yeah, I like, yeah, tell me a little more about that. Tiger's Tale, is that what you do for, like, Tiger's Tale and all that?
That's kind of the genesis, the roots of A Tiger's Tale. So it originally started as a one-page strip in the back of the old black and white Kung Fu magazines.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it was kind of like a combination of subject of the month, or like a reader would write in and ask a question about a specific point of history. And then I would kind of research it, or I would work with the various Kung Fu masters I had access to. Mm-hmm. And then kind of come up with a one-page comic strip, you know, answering that reader's question. And then from there, I just ended up having this whole cosmology of, like, ideas and concepts and little anecdotes. And so I was like, well, I have these characters, you know, what would it be like to really just scale it up and make a full-on, like, Kung Fu epic with talking animals, you know? But then I didn't want it just to be fight scenes, you know? So I kind of got a little more philosophical and tried to really lean into, like, the teachings that all of these martial arts are really kind of hiding, you know, like they're teaching you how to defend yourself in a fight, but then there's also, like, you know, a lesson on how to live right while you do so.
And I think that's the spirit of martial arts too, that, you know, it doesn't just teach you how to, like, fight or be a badass and all that. I mean, that's a bonus.
Yeah.
You know, but I think it teaches you a lot about, like, how to control yourself when you're in certain situations. It helps you stay in the zone. It also teaches you, like, pretty much self-control.
Definitely. And then the interesting thing that, like, when you go a little deeper, right, if you go into the literal translation of the word Kung Fu, it doesn't mean like a martial skill or fighting skill. It just really means really a whole lot of skill in a specific thing. So you can have good kung fu in cooking. You can have good kung fu in, you know, drawing. And so there's that whole concept just breaks it out even more, that you can have someone who's just a good kung fu chef, and not just because he happens to be able to wield a, you know, a cleaver in some, you know, Sammo Hung style movie, but just, you know, knowing what it takes to really make a good meal. There's kung fu in that. So I think looking at that concept really just opens up the whole potential of what's being conveyed in those lessons.
When I think of this comic too, and like just the design of it, and you mentioned the use of animals, I think of the graphic novel called Mouse by forgot the writer's name. I think it was
Art Spiegelman.
Yeah, there it is, Art Spiegelman. And I remember reading that back in college when I took this comic book class, and it was just really interesting how he used like animals to represent like different cultures and all that, like. Obviously the mice were, you know, mice were Jews, and mm-hmm. the frogs were the French were the frogs, and the Americans were like the dogs, and I think the Germans or something were like the wolves. I just thought that was really interesting, and that's what this comic kind of reminds me of, this use of animals and all that, and the use of like tigers doing martial arts, and I think I even saw, saw like a swan in there too.
Oh yeah, there's a swan. I mean, there's a whole sequence where it's very Jungle Book-ish, right? You have two humans that are found, and then they're basically taught martial arts by the animals, you know? So there's a snake that teaches some snake kung fu, and, you know, I mean, I don't go one for one and try and have an animal for each one. You know, there's a crocodile that teaches crocodile kung fu, but there's no such thing as crocodile kung fu. But I just wanted to, you know, it made for a cool drawing, that's for sure. I definitely wanted to play with some of those ideas, right? Like within the Chinese philosophy or cosmology, right? There's a whole hierarchy of animals, right? That's used in the astrology. So, you know, in the West, we'll ask, you know, hey, what sign are you? You know, I'm a Pisces, right?
Right,
but,
yeah.
You know, but in China, they'll ask, what animal are you? You know, I'm a monkey, you're a tiger or a dog. And then each, in the same way that a Pisces or an Aquarius has a kind of a personality, you know, a tiger or a monkey also has a kind of a personality. So it was just fun to kind of try and convey that too within a story.
Definitely. And conveying that to the story. And I just found it interesting that they would, like, a tiger would take in two human foundlings. I thought that was a really interesting concept. It almost, like you said, it kind of does remind me of Jungle Book when the animals took Mowgli in to raise him, or Tarzan, even, when he's raised by apes.
Right. And I wanted to play with that concept of, you know, the tigers, so often, like in the Jungle Book, the tiger is the bad guy, you know, or, you know, the tiger is the threat. So I wanted to kind of take that and just play an inversion with it, you know. So you can almost imagine, you know, what would it be like for a tiger to decide to be a vegetarian, you know? So it, just kind of playing with some of those
That's
those
a really
ideas,
cool concept, yeah.
You know, because, you know, here I am, while I'm developing this comic, I'm also talking with Shaolin monks who have just come over from China, and they're vegetarian. And so it's just like the chance to talk about them and how they're, you know, they meditate on the concept of tiger kung fu, but they'll eat tofu rather than meat, right? So it's like, what's that about? What's going on in there? You know, so it was always those kind of interesting questions that then, you know, I'm trying to communicate in a comic with my choices, you know.
Right.
Whether it comes through or not, you know, might change, but maybe it'll offer some questions, you know, that people ruminate on the idea of a tiger that doesn't want to eat meat. You know, what's that about?
It almost reminds me of Jabberjaw too, in a sense. Have you seen that cartoon?
I remember that cartoon. Yeah. Well, a lot of that. You could also think of what was the recent one that was similar to Jabberjaw, but I think it was like not Pixar, maybe DreamWorks, with a shark that wants to be a dolphin. I remember it was voiced by Jack Black, but
yeah, I don't know that one actually, but I did know there was another cartoon about a shark who didn't want it, who actually called himself a vegetarian, and then like he would like refuse to eat meat, though sometimes he would be tempted.
Yeah.
You know, and then in one episode even he actually found like a stack of meat and he started eating it, then like he's like, what am I doing? You know?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much potential for humor in that kind of situation. And, you know, yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, once you've already decided to have your animals start talking in this work of fiction, right, then why do you have to go with the assumption that a tiger or a shark is going to want to only eat meat? You know, if they're already talking, then let's see where else those characters can go. So, I mean, that's, I think, a fun aspect. But, like, within Chinese culture, there's a lot of... you know, the most popular among them would be like the Monkey King, right? Who's like a heroic character in his own right, but he's still a monkey. And you could see it's like such a parable of that like human dilemma of, you know, on the one side you're smart and you can reason, on the other side, you know, you have primal urges and you act on instinct. And so like, you know, the Monkey King is such a great character that combines those two. And then now he's all over the place, right? Like he's showing up in DC Comics. He's arrived. So it's kind of like, you know, a tiger can't be soon after. You know, there's such a connection that those animals seem to have. You know, monkeys, tigers, and dragons, right? That's a pretty crazy trifecta right there, I think.
I mean, it is, especially, you know, I mean, when you imagine, you know, when you mention like the dragon and all that, you know, kind of reminds me also of the Chinese zodiac and the story about how, or the Chinese New Year, a story about how like each animal got its year, and it was like this race of like these animals, and I think the animal that came in last place was the cat. But I think in Vietnam, it was like the other way around. It was the rabbit that came in last place or something like that.
It does change around. I recall maybe it was Vietnam where one of the animals is a cat, whereas in China there is no cat. The cat isn't part of it, but the ox, if I recall correctly, the ox, because he's a hard worker, was really gonna be the first one to win the race.
Yeah.
But the rat, because the rat is clever, convinced the ox to like hitch a ride so that they could like, you know, cross the river together. But then just as they approach the finish line, the story goes that the rat runs over the ox's head to the tip of the ox's nose, and so that the rat ends up being first place on the race.
That's clever.
With the ox being second, and then the tiger follows a little further behind, fifth or sixth, and it goes further and further back so that number 12 is the pig, right? The lazy pig.
Yeah.
There's one story that talks about, which I included within Tiger's Tale because I like the concept, where that the rat actually steals the invitation from the cat, and that's why the cats hate rats and are always hunting rats, because of that vendetta. So
that makes sense. I can see, yeah,
right. And so it's this one part of like the logic of those stories. So there's a scene within A Tiger's Tale where, you know, Khan, the Prince of Tigers, encounters this one like kind of an alley cat, a homeless cat, who's just like, you know, still seeking revenge against any mice he could find. And, you know, it becomes one of the little steps along the way that Khan, the Prince of Tiger, has to kind of come to terms with about his own feelings regarding humans and other species.
Yeah, I was gonna mention that too, like, you know, how he comes across these two human foundlings that his mom decides to take care of and actually raise as her own. Like, does that like actually, I mean, from what it looks like it really stirs his emotions, like to the point where he becomes more resentful towards them and towards humans in general. I feel like this story, when I read the synopsis and I looked at it, it looked like it was sort of a redemption story for him too. Like he has to like kind of learn that, you know, yeah, you're the Tiger Prince, but, you know, like just because you're the prince, you know, I mean, doesn't mean the world revolves around you, I guess, is that the angle that this story's going?
There's definitely a lot of that. I wanted to explore. I'm a younger brother, and I wanted to explore some of those dynamics within the character, because there's within the context of martial arts, there's a lot of familial metaphors, right? Your teacher is considered your father. Your senior students are considered older brothers, right? So there's a lot of like metaphor that plays back and forth. So I wanted to play a little bit with that, whereas Khan sees these humans who are learning mantis kung fu from the mantis. They're learning snake kung fu from the snake. Although this is all like, it's not as explicit, but he ultimately gets jealous because he wants to learn these things as well. But he's a tiger, and no mantis is going to want to teach a tiger
Oh
anything, because
no.
no snake is going to want to teach a tiger how not to be a tiger. So it becomes this dynamic of him, his jealousy. He wants that. He's supposed to be a tiger, and he should learn how to be a tiger, but he wants this other thing. And then that kind of, leads to youthful indiscretions, and he ends up, setting off a cascade of mistakes, because he's leaving the Tao, right? He's going, trying to do this other thing, and then that, and in response, cause and effect, things cause problems. So then he has to, work his way back to just being okay with being a tiger. And part of that has to do with the humans that he meets, right? So he initially blames humans for his problems, but then as the story progresses, he's got to kind of confront how much of that is his own assumption, as he starts seeing humans who can appreciate a tiger. And so that's where you have the story of like Tiger Kung Fu being a factor within the whole comic, right? Is the birth of Tiger Kung Fu. These Shaolin monks appreciate Khan for being a tiger. They want to learn what it's like to be a tiger. And as a result, he starts learning how to appreciate humans, which makes him worthy, which makes him a worthy tiger.
Wow. And so you, speaking of Shaolin monks, you also said too that you interviewed Shaolin monks prior to creating this comic and getting like insight and wisdom from them.
Oh yeah, I mean that's one of the greatest perks of my day job for a number of years, was working as graphic designer for Kung Fu magazine. And so I was there front row center when the very first Shaolin monks came from China, migrated to America, tried to make a living here. And as a result, the magazine was one of the first English language magazines to like take an actual Shaolin monk, put him on the cover. And so I was there for that photo shoot, and
Wow.
it was just, I mean, so like so amazing to see, these individuals and peak performance, physiques, what they could do. And then, to get some of the philosophy through, at first through translation, because I did not speak the language. They did not really speak that much English, but I was lucky having my sketchbook. I could draw some things. I could imitate a few Chinese characters, which they could then read. And we had a translator there doing the interview, so we could like learn and communicate from each other. But then over time, more and more monks would come, and they would develop different relationships. They're all people too, trying to make a living in the States. So some of them would relocate and be local. They'd come in for photo shoots. We needed an article. They'd come in, do a demonstration, and little by little, we would just get to know each other. And some of them were more savvy with the English language, and we can communicate, some of those other, like that first monk, I'll tell you a quick story, ultimately ended up becoming the Shaolin monk teacher for none other than the RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan.
Wow.
So it's, and so he still is a well-renowned Shaolin monk in New York City, teaching, high-level students. So he did well from himself.
That must have been quite an experience, just like having to interview Shaolin monks and, seeing like what they do in their day to day and everything. I mean, I heard that monks, like, especially the Shaolin monks especially have like, crazy discipline. I think I saw it in this one YouTube video. I forget who though, but it was about this guy who, this young dude who was like, I think he was from Germany, and like he lived like several years as a Shaolin monk. I mean, I think this was like a little bit after college, and he would, you know, he would like talk about like how he had to do certain drills every day, you know, certain chores. I mean, these guys are like crazy disciplined.
Oh yeah. I mean, China has really like over the past whatever 10 years has really put a spotlight and really you know, Shaolin Temple has become a UNESCO site, right? So it's a historical heritage site, so it's protected, and so China has put invested a lot to make it a, you know, to bring it back up to, you know, worldwide status, which mm-hmm. the side effect is that now people can go and train there and have the experience, you know. But historically, it's, you know, people endure, like people go there and they endure great hardships, but you know, the side effect is, you know, they strive for enlightenment, and part of that is shown by what they can achieve, you know. And I've seen some amazing feats by some of them, you know. I've seen a Shaolin monk take a needle and throw it through a pane of glass to pop a balloon, you know.
Wow.
And then I've seen him do similar tricks with like chopsticks, throwing the chopsticks, you know. I've seen the breaking of bricks, and I've seen, you know, okay, here's one fun story. For one of the events that the magazine hosted that I worked for, we hosted a big celebration, and one Shaolin monk was gonna demonstrate his iron body technique. And so if you can imagine, iron body technique means that you can endure incredible impact. So we had about 8 other guys, all of them martial artists, charge him with what's essentially a log, you know, like the kind of pole, like a 6-foot length of a telephone pole that we had to buy a telephone pole, cut off 6 feet, and that's what 8 guys used to run at this Shaolin monk, who stood there and just didn't budge. Well, and this is on YouTube, so I could share the link with you. It's amazing. You know, and they hit him like 3 times, like trying to knock over a door. And on the 3rd time, you could even watch it. They almost fell over, and he kind of uses his body to catch them and like push momentum, them back up, you know. And so that just shows like how, you know, can you imagine, like, we'd be knocked over flat being charged by 6 guys in a pole. And here's this monk who's not only enduring it, but he's helping them out. He doesn't want them to fall over and hurt themselves, you know.
That's amazing.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I mean, I wouldn't say that it's just exclusive to, you know, the Shaolin monks. You know, I've seen masters who are like well into their 80s, and they can do splits that I could never do when I was like at the top of my shape in my 20s. You know, and it's just amazing to see. You know, inspiring. And in fact, there's one Taoist master who I'm really excited about, because he's also an incredible calligrapher. Mm-hmm. He does the Chinese calligraphy. He's an incredible painter, and he's got all of these other kind of physics-defying stunts that he could do. So like one of them is he'll take a flat of eggs, put them on the floor, and climb up on them. He'll stand on these eggs and not crack any of them, and he'll just do his painting while standing on eggs. You know, and it's absurd, right? Like, why would you learn how to practice how to do that? You know, but it's just like, you know, a measurement of his ability to hold his balance, a measurement of his ability to stay calm. And, you know, I mean, he's also chopped steel pipes with his bare hands. So the egg thing is just one of his stunts.
That's amazing. But, he hasn't boiled the eggs either.
No. I mean, occasionally one egg will crack, and so you'll see that's a flat of cracked eggs. But still, like, you know, like it's just like a step up from chopping a block of ice. It's these other bizarre little stunts. But that martial artist, right? His name is Grandmaster Tu, and he's agreed to let me use one of his paintings for a cover on Tiger's Tail, which I think is just so cool, because he doesn't speak very good English, but we've always bonded on the art tip. You know, I'll share with him some of my art, and he's always shared some of his. And, you know, here we are doing this stunt where we're filming him do this crazy painting on some eggs. And, you know, we'll just bond over the fact that we're doing art, you know? So then when I told him about this project, he was like, oh, here, you know, sure, of course you could use one of my tigers as a cover. And then also here, here's another painting, use this too somewhere, you know? So I've got these amazing works of art that, you know, he wants out there in the world. So there'll be an alternate cover or a poster or something. But I threw them all online, you know, so you can find them on what my website, atigerstale.com. But, you know, I just can't help but express my enthusiasm for getting a Kung Fu master to do a variant cover, you know?
Yeah, that is like, yeah, that's awesome, man. Like, to get a Kung Fu master to give you a piece of his art. And so speaking of the Kung Fu master, have you based any of these like characters on the Kung Fu masters?
Not specifically. Well, I mean, one character within the comic is Tamo, right? He's also known as Bodhidharma. He's the patriarch of Kung Fu. So he's more of a historic figure, but, you know, if mm-hmm. you've heard of Shaolin Temple and you've heard of Kung Fu, you've heard of this, you know, the bug-eyed monk, they'll call him, you know, and he's just like an old school progenitor of martial arts. And so I couldn't not use such a character for the story. But in terms of like the martial artist that I know, it's more like I've tried to use my conversations to kind of gain some insights and then, you know, fit that into the background of the story. But a lot of those martial artists who are also fans of comics, you know, they've agreed to write a few essays for me or to film some video that I can use to kind of share some of the more educational stuff, mm-hmm. right? Because A Tiger's Tale is ultimately a work of fiction, right? It's my story that's got all of this stuff behind it. But I also want to, you know, give people a chance to learn about the real stories and the real lessons. And so rather than me trying to say, you know, this is what a story means, let them use my website to, so that they can explain the origins of what a tiger, how a tiger relates to a specific school of Kung Fu, or, you know, how, what I might have used, like the character Bodhidharma, I used him in a fictional sense, but then on a more historical sense, let's get a Shaolin scholar to kind of write an article to kind of explain some of the historical significance of that. So I'm kind of trying to balance out the fiction with more of the real lessons, because I have access to these guys, so I should try and bridge that gap.
You definitely have a treasure trove of knowledge, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's true. And these folks are amazing. You know, they've achieved such great things. But then it's also fun to know that they're not, that some of them like comics or some of them like other art forms. And so we could talk about things that's not just about Kung Fu, because I'm not trying to sell a website that's Kung Fu. I'm not trying to sell a comic that's just all about, you know, read this comic and you'll learn Kung Fu, right? Yeah. It's more about read this comic if you're interested in Kung Fu and want to learn more about what goes on behind the thinking of Kung Fu, I guess. But still, yeah. You know, there's monsters, you know, there's some punching and whatnot as well.
I mean, there's gonna be a whole lot of action, that's for sure. And but I mean, I think, you know, I like how you mentioned that the, you know, I think Kung Fu encompasses everything, you know, anything could be encompassed of Kung Fu. Like you said, a Kung Fu of cooking, in my case, a Kung Fu of podcasting.
Yes.
But
yes.
Yeah. And it's just, that's really, I never thought of it that way, because I thought, you know, when you think Kung Fu, you automatically think, you know, you automatically think Jackie Chan or Jet Li or...
Yeah. Or Bruce Lee, right? Bruce the Lee. Guy. Yeah. And then so you can also think of Bruce Lee was also, he was a champion cha-cha dancer in the 60s.
That I did not know about him. I mean, I knew he was a good philosopher, you know, yes. Said a lot of stuff about like how water can take on any, you know, shape or form, but, you know, but a cha-cha dancer, that's a new one.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is, but it also kind of shows, like, his kung fu went beyond just, you know, fighting and kicking. He had the moves so much that he could win an award dancing the cha-cha, which, you know, it's just such a great little bit of history. And then you could imagine the same with Jet Li, Jackie Chan, or, you know, the current King of the Hill, right, is Donnie Yen, so.
Donnie Yen, yeah.
Right, they're all, you know, they're all, it's not just that they have good martial arts skills, you know, there's this other stuff going on that just, that complements what they do.
Like, they're multifaceted and all that good stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Right, so, I was wondering too, like, when doing the Tiger's Tail, you also are the writer, but you're also the artist too, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes. Writer, artist, letterer, colorist.
Wow, you did all.
It's all, yeah. I mean, Tiger's Tail has always been about what I'm learning at the time.
Yeah.
So it's just such a personal project that I just, every iteration is just more about what I've learned the latest, you know? So over the past year, I've been learning Clip Studio Pro. So it's like, all right, well, here I am bringing this project to Kickstarter. And when I originally completed it, it was going to be a black and white comic, right? I had this whole concept of black and white, yin and yang, you know, it should just stay black and white. But now that I'm, you know, times have changed, right? It's a whole new world out there over the course of this pandemic. So why not take what I'm learning and deliver it as a color piece? So over the course of the past few months, I've just dove in, remastered all the artwork, and just decided to create like a kind of a color scheme that evolves as the story evolves.
Yeah, it's, you know, and like the fact that, you know, especially with the pandemic, I think it's given everyone an opportunity to kind of reinvent themselves in a sense. I mean, that's one good thing that came out about it, you know. And the art looks really amazing. I mean, yeah, I really like the art too. And I mean, it would have been really interesting to see in black and white too, because I think like stories like The Walking Dead, where it's like black and white, but yet, you know, it's like, you know exactly what's going on. And I think one of the interesting things about comics like this one and like Mouse and even like Walking Dead to a sense is just that, you know, the art is powerful though, but then like when you really go into the story, automatically you become a part of that world and you even kind of forget sometimes that it's, for instance, like in terms of like A Tiger's Tale, you forget it's about animals. It's just about, you know, a philosophy, right? Like a story is being told. Like you focus on the story at that point. And, you know, the art just carries you along with it at this point. And I think it's the same deal with like Mouse and The Walking Dead. Like you forget certain things, like, oh, you forget that it's black and white, or you forget that it's animals. I mean, well, you do know that it's animals though, but then you kind of like, it doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how to explain it though, but it's just that it kind of goes along with the story. Like, it's just, okay, you're in their world right now. And in a sense, you kind of become one of them, I feel.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, I guess what some people might call that like the suspension of belief, or like that buy-in.
Yeah, suspension of belief.
Once you've kind of given yourself into that story, right? It's, if the story's good, you'll stay, you know? And then sometimes, you know, there's that crazy thing where some stories can be really immersive and you forget that you're reading something, and other stories could be could always be making you remember that you're reading something because they're doing little tricks with their artwork, you know, and they're playing with the form. And I mean, that's some high level stuff. When you see someone like, Dave Mazzucchelli wrote a graphic novel called Asteros Polyp.
I read that back in school. That was like a really great comic too.
Yeah, and it always like, it blew my mind so thoroughly that I still feel like I just read it. I still feel like if someone needs an example of a comic that really, you know, breaks the form, like that one's right, comes right to mind. You know, I could see it on my bookshelf right over there. It's just, you know, what it did in terms of like using the art to tell the story while also telling a story. I think is just next level. So for me, I'm just always trying to do stuff with the art, experimenting with it, you know, trying to use different mediums. So like,
yeah,
not one page is necessarily like, you can look at one page and it might indicate a whole different kind of drawing techniques that I engaged in, and then you look at another page and it would have a, you know, a whole other different set of techniques, and some pages might be almost painted and then other pages are entirely digital, right? But the goal is to try and create a story that uses all of those elements as well as the plot and the characters and the actual moments, you know.
Yeah, because like I think too, like I've been recently reading a book on, you know, I've been recently reading Scott McCloud's book, and like also studying a little bit of Will Eisner, and like how they use the concept of like writing pictures and then drawing words, and how those are kind of synonymous. I think that's where it kind of like there's some kind of a fusion of words and pictures and all that, and like everything's pretty much an image, you know, like even a letter can be an image.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, those guys, you know, which is so next level with their thinking, you know, and how we're all able to have this vocabulary because they did the work of really, you know, blocking it out and giving us the syllabus, right? To say, okay, read this and you'll have a better understanding of how these mechanics work. You know, I think of that with Will Eisner, one of his books.
Will Eisner, yes.
Right? He does a sequence where like, the whole story takes place while a guy is eating a spaghetti dinner.
Yeah.
And how the spaghetti is just like becoming the panel borders. And it's just this one crazy page that he just, you know, built around this crazy concept. You know, I'm going to make a messy spaghetti dinner and then build a story around that, you know. And like him doing that back then just made it so much easier for other artists to just come in and push it to the next level again and again, whether it's, you know, using the technology, you know, or just using like the concept. And you have these visionary artists that are out there now. Like comics now is just such a wide spectrum of style and technique and aesthetic, right? So you have like,
yep,
you know, a full range. You know, it's not just superheroes anymore.
I mean, oh no, it's like you know, it's like a full range, like I said, it's like a spectrum. And you know, especially with stories like The Walking Dead, like I mentioned before, you know, like I enjoy stories like that, and then also Asterios Polyp, which you previously mentioned, and my other favorite one was Undiscovered Country by Charles Soule from Image Comics. That's a real good comic, and you know, I've been enjoying that one. And like how, and funny enough, with Undiscovered Country, it's just that came out before the pandemic too, and how eerily similar those two were. And I was just like, oh crap, dude, like holy crap.
Oh yeah, I mean that's the power of art. I mean, like just think of Why the Last Man, which is now on television, and
mm-hmm.
you know how prescient it is to be on television right now, global pandemic, but when that comic was coming out, right? It was such
that was
a different
way
take.
Back, yeah.
You know, and yeah, I mean, it's just, it's kind of it's great when you can see like art, you know, or a medium like comics, you know, has so much viability where it's not constrained in the way that like a $1 million movie is constrained, right? Like the Black Widow movie has to be a certain way, or, you know, because there's so much money behind it, but the comics can be much more, you know, experimental. People can go a little further and test things out
Great
ways, you know, like a Samurai Bunny, right? Who knew that'd be so good? And, you know, now the rest of the world is catching up such that, you know, if we're lucky, we'll see one, you know, on TV, like, again.
Yep.
So I mean, but, like, you can look at, like, what, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, right, is such a great success story in terms of being like a germ of an idea and then just how it just exploded to become this phenomenon, you know.
Yeah, and like especially using animals too. I mean, no one would have, you know, back then would ever have thought, like, you know, Bugs Bunny with a samurai sword, or, you know, it's like, I mean, even the concept of like Looney Tunes, I mean, like you would have to think like, you know, animals, like, but it works. And I think it goes back to even what Scott McCloud said, you know, when the simplicity of it, I think he said something along the lines of like how the more simple the cartoon is, the more people actually gravitate towards it.
Oh yeah, that's so true. And I think that that allows for a lot of leeway, right? So a simple, a simple cartoonish rabbit can tell a certain kind of story, and that would be received so differently than say, what was it, the Vertigo series, Sheriff of Babylon, that was almost like, it was beautifully illustrated, but it was so, taking place, during the occupation of Iraq, written from the perspective of the soldiers, right? It was very much a real world comic,
Right.
and so that just required a very different approach than having, a samurai bunny where you want everyone to buy into it. So the character is designed in this way that, most people could just identify without too much problem. So yeah, I mean, I think I tried to do something similar in terms of having, a black and white. I mean, I ran into a dilemma where I had this tiger that's been black and white, and then I had to decide, is he going to be an orange tiger, or is he going to be a white tiger?
Oh.
I went with orange, but I, but there's still the part of me that's like, oh, there's a whole story where he could have been the one white thing, and everything else could have been colored, and that. Maybe I'll do that for another version, but it's just
Hey.
like just the like the visual, like once you can look at a story and start thinking about those aspects of how can color be used to help tell the story.
Yeah,
So
absolutely.
I think I've got a kind of a cool way to do it, but if I tell you, then I might spoil.
It's almost like the Wizard of Oz, I feel.
Oh yeah, there you go. You've already kind of you're kind of intuiting what where I'm going with it. But it's been fun to kind of like really try and look at that story again, like and find try and give it new life by looking at it through the lens of color. Since I've already done, all of the black and white artwork, and I compiled it into like a, I've self-published like books that's just like this is it with all the black and white art. So now to come back and revisit the story in color just kind of gives it new life. Makes it fun for me as well as hopefully makes it even more appealing to the readers that I'm hoping to interest, especially like the younger readers, right?
Yeah.
Young. As the mature readers can understand that, some things are presented better in black and white, but I really want this to be accessible to as wide an audience as possible. So I want it to be colorful enough that you can give it to your nephew or niece, and the colors will pull them in and the animals will pull them in, and then little by little they'll start asking you philosophical questions because of something in the book.
Yeah, totally spot on, man. Like, I totally agree with that. I was just gonna ask you too, like, what got you into like martial arts and working for the martial arts or Kung Fu magazine?
Well, I mean, like I said, I mentioned earlier, I had two older brothers, and so they like to tussle, and if
Yeah.
I if they caught me drawing in their comics, because I had to learn to draw somehow, so if they caught me drawing in their comics, I'd have to take up track and field. But at one point, they were into the martial arts, and so I just kind of started following them around and I started picking it up. And then combining that with, say, your basic like Sunday afternoon black belt theater, and combining the kung fu movies with the comics, and then, oh, this can be done. It just was always available to kind of explore. And so every so often I'd dip in, the after school program or the high after school in high school, or eventually like the Kung Fu club in college. There was always a little bit more to be found, and it just kept getting more and more interesting, such that by the time I moved from New York to California, it was just happenstance. I answered an ad, they needed a graphic designer. I was a graphic designer. you know, I showed up there and they're like, oh, by the way, we published this magazine. It's called Kung Fu. And I'm like, I know that magazine. Mm-hmm. I do some Kung Fu, you know? And so it just hit it off from there. You know, I mean, the founder, she likes to say that it was just destiny. Like it was karma that like her daughter had moved to New York. And so she thought that if she hired a New Yorker, then her daughter would do fine and someone would hire her in New York. And,
yeah.
You know, whatever the logic, it worked. And I just had a great time immediately once I realized what, you know, what was there. It wasn't just doing ads for some company. It was, you know, laying out magazine articles. And, mm-hmm. you know, little by little, we could just go further, you know, designing T-shirts for martial arts. And then just like that whole organizing a cover photo shoot and just having the whole thing, you know, this Kung Fu master is coming into town. We're going to do a cover shoot. We're going to put him on the cover of the magazine. We'll photograph him and we'll interview him and maybe we'll videotape him. And so just to be there for every step.
That must be a lot of fun, dude.
Oh, it was just amazing. You know, I mean, it's still a job and, you know, sometimes jobs, you know, working a job is not, it's all cut out to be, but there would be times when, you know, you'd meet someone who was, you know, who I got to meet, which was, has been always a lot of fun, is Grandmaster Chu Chi Leng. So you probably don't know that you've seen him in action, right? He's the tailor from the movie Kung Fu Hustle. I suspect you've seen Kung Fu Hustle.
I might have seen Kung Fu Hustle. I'm not really sure. I mean, I've heard the title though, and I probably might see the movie.
So Kung Fu Hustle, great movie if you haven't seen it. It's a Kung Fu comedy by Stephen Chow, the guy who's done his other great movie was Shaolin Soccer. These are great.
I've seen Shaolin Soccer, and I've also seen Kung Pao.
Yeah. Okay, so Kung Pao, I think, is American-made. Shaolin Soccer and Kung Fu Hustle are, like, you know, China-made. So even though they're comedies, they have real-deal Kung Fu masters in those movies. And so it's just so amazing to see this guy did this thing in this movie, but he's also really the Kung Fu master for that style of martial arts in real life, you know? And so things like that are always just fun to witness, you know, to look at some of these old movies on like Amazon Prime, Shaolin Temple, right? Jet Li's first movie. And just to see like all of these background characters that have been coming through the office, you know, and I've done photo shoots with them, and then here they are, you know, this is what they were doing 10 years ago, doing their Kung Fu, or 20 years ago, probably longer now, what am I thinking, you know? But just to my eyes, they haven't aged a day. And here they are in this movie from 1981, maybe. And then here they are in whatever, 2005, coming into California to be a part of a Kung Fu tournament. And it's the same dude doing the same thing, but, you know, just one's got subtitles and the other one you kind of need to count on a translator for.
Dang. So, and these guys have a lot left in the tank, it sounds like.
Some of them do. Some of them are truly amazing to watch. And just to see guys like that in action, you know, just is inspiring, right? And it's just kind of motivating too. So it's good to know they're out there, you know, these Kung Fu heroes, you know.
Wow. I mean, that is quite the experience though. I mean, like, you know, you get to like, you know, meet people from like, you know, one of like Kung Fu and like, you know, the history of like, you know, the martial arts. I mean, that'd be like me, like, you know, dream job. Like I work for a comic book magazine or something, and I bump into like, you know, Robert Downey Jr. or something, or, you know, if you were still alive, Christopher Reeve as Superman, like, you know, that'd be really awesome. Or Anthony Mackie, the current Captain America, you know.
Oh yeah. Or, you know, speaking like as a comic artist, right, meeting Bill Sienkiewicz, you know, or meeting some of these like these superstar artists who are out there, and they're all very accessible, but it's just like there's a difference between meeting them, say, at a convention and then being able, like having to work with them on a project together, even if it's not.
Man, that'd be phenomenal.
You know, even if it's not like a real project, like even like if it's just like the chance to work on a photo shoot with them, right? Where that, you know, you're there for whatever reason while this thing's happening. That's like a different level to the experience, which I think is amazing. But it's also fun to see, like, to be there and then to see other people show up and be starstruck because they can recognize that this guy, you know, is a star in his field, you know?
Right, I mean...
I was just gonna segue into, like, those people who are actually stars, but then, you know, do Kung Fu. Not that I've met any... Well, the biggest star that I met who was a devoted martial artist up until the end of his life was the Lou Reed, right? The rock star Lou Reed, who I got to meet once or twice because his Kung Fu master was a good friend of the magazine. And so he wanted to bridge the connection. He wanted to get Lou Reed on the cover of a martial, even though the guy's been on however many copies of like Rolling Stone and whatever other covers he's been on, you know, like Lou Reed was so devoted to martial arts that for him being on the cover of a Kung Fu magazine was a feather in his own cap, you know. And so that's such a crazy thing to experience, you know. I was the guy who photographed him for some of that, you know, and so here I am on this one-on-one photo shoot with this rock star, you know, and I'm just like, This is cool, you know, and yet he's also at the photo shoot was the rock star's Kung Fu instructor. So he's making Lou Reed work super hard, and yet Lou Reed is usually the guy that, like, you know, everyone else bends over backwards for because he's the star and, you know, in any given room that he shows up in.
Dang.
And so here I am taking pictures and, you know, here's, you know, Master Ren, who's like built like a tank, and he's just like, Lou, you've got to bend deeper, squat deeper, stand up straighter. And he's just like treating him like he would treat any of his students, you know.
He's still not a student. Starstruck. I mean, he's not, yeah, I mean, even to this day, he's still a student, you know, he's still an apprentice to, you know, his Jedi Master or whatever.
Right. And the really truly amazing thing was that, you know, they ended up creating a bond that was like a Jedi Master and their Padawan. You know, they were just close. They were like brothers to each other, you know. And so to kind of be there and witness that, that's just like a special thing, right? That's just like
a kind of
feather in my own cap to just have been in the right place at the right time. So that's always something that I can look back on and be like, hey, that kind of related to being an artist, but really it's just about, like, you know, being both lucky and kind of having made a few good choices, right, to end up in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely. So going back to A Tiger's Tale, it's going to be on Kickstarter on February the 1st. And what are your rewards for the Kickstarter?
Oh, yeah, well, we've got the rewards that include on the alternate copy that I was talking to you about, the variant cover. Mm-hmm. But I've also included some of my other projects, including a mini comic that I did a year or so ago that was Kung Fu themed, but also, how would I say it? It was Kung Fu versus vampires.
That sounds awesome.
So that's like an extra little mini comic I'm throwing in there. I'm also going to include a few gallery prints and even a couple of pieces of original art, because over the course of working on this project, I've also been fortunate in being able to display some of those pieces in galleries. So I've got a few extra prints framed and, you know, I've just had them on my wall. So why not make space for some new art by including some of those as rewards? I've got some cool stickers, which I'm excited about. You know, like, the cool thing about February 1st is that it is also Chinese New Year.
I forgot about that, man.
And it's also going to be Year of the Tiger, right?
Year of the Tiger. So it's perfect.
It's kind of, once again, it's one of those meant to be things. And so here's like this is what I'm calling a luck dragon. So you know, Chinese New Year. You've seen Never Ending Story, right? We could all use a little
Ending Story, yeah.
Right? We could all use a little extra luck, you know, in the new year. So little things like that, a little sticker can be added on. But I'm most excited about getting the book into people's hands and getting the extra reading material. I've got this one comic, right? That I call it Tiger's Tail 1/2 because I did a short run of that comic to coincide with some of my gallery shows. The thing is that story has changed completely in the graphic novels. So it's like a, it's like an alternate reality prologue to the greater story, you know? So wow. Things like that, you could read the main story and you could read these other stories that are also have to do with, you know, more kung fu folklore through other filters.
That's amazing, man. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to getting my copy and reading it and, you know, just getting my perspective on the comic. And it's just, I like stories of martial arts and like martial arts in general. Just like you said, it just, how it goes along with philosophy, just like with The Matrix even. That's what I was gonna also mention too, you know, there's they use kung fu and, you know, philosophy and how, you know, with the fact that, you know, the fight between, the sparring between Morpheus and Neo was actually really poetic in a sense. It was like a father training his own son, in a sense.
Yes. And also, I mean, one of the great things about the original Matrix was that they went and they went to Hong Kong and they got one of the best kung fu choreographers in the industry. You know, and that guy's name is Yen Wupeng. And he's been around forever. And, you know, some of the best kung fu movies out there. I mean, he helped build Jet Li's career with his choreography. And he's the same choreographer who worked on Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Oh, I've seen Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Right. And so, that, I mean, the guy is just like, was a master of that particular kung fu, which they call wire fu, right? Because you've got guys, stuntmen on these wires doing these feats. And so he did train Keanu Reeves and Lawrence Fishburne and work them hard for six. I mean, we hear about it now all the time, you know, like how much training Simu Liu did for his role in Shang-Chi. But back in 1999, you know, it was a different thing for an actor to be required to take, you know, 6 months of hardcore kung fu training for a role, you know. Dang. And one of the great things though is that you know, it kind of changed Keanu Reeves' life. Like, he kept with his kung fu practice from that movie going forward. And, you know, the reason why I know this is because we covered it as it was happening, and we didn't even know what the movie would be. Like, I could show you the magazine layout I did before I saw the movie, and I was just guessing at what this movie was. And then the follow-up article that we did after we saw the movie, because I had no idea, I was just trying to guess, what's it gonna look like, you know, what's this thing called The Matrix, you know? And so,
yeah, you know,
we were there. Kung Fu Magazine was there when that happened. And so it was just such a game changer, you know. Like, you saw it in the movies, and then even to this day, like all the John Wick films, you know, Keanu Reeves could not do those movies if he didn't spend the past 20 years still keeping that flame alive. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, you wouldn't have all those jokes about, like, don't, whatever you do, don't kill his dog, you know?
Yeah, all of that.
Yeah.
With all that said, I'm kind of annoyed with the newest Matrix movie, which really dropped the ball on that side.
There was a lot
of
negative views on that one. Yeah, I mean, I like the characters. Like, Bugs was my favorite character. I mean, I thought she was really funny and spunky, but then it's the way they delivered it, though. I was just like, Matrix, well, like I seen when I was, like, you know, when I was a teenager growing up. But
yeah, I mean, I like to think of it as I like Matrix 4 in the broad strokes. I like the big general way it went, but then when it got into the details, it just didn't hold up. And one of those details was those fight scenes that, you know, that just started annoying me, because I was like, what is that? What's that double high five that he's doing, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
but we can't have it all, so
yeah, I mean, we really can't. I mean, wishful thinking.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I think a fundamental kung fu ethic is, you know, do better next time, right? So
exactly. I like that. Well, so that's gonna pretty much wrap it up. Thank you so much, Patrick, for being on this podcast. Yep, so we're gonna wrap it up. Any last things to say to the constant listeners?
Well, check out Tiger's Tail. I plan to devote the entire year to the year of the Tiger's Tail, so I've got, you know, more art to do. I've got a follow-up volume like ready to go. If people like this one, that there's so much more story to be shared. So check it out. And plus, I'll be doing stuff pretty regularly on the website. You know, the Tiger Tuesdays is a thing where I've interviewed some really amazing Kung Fu masters. Like, I've gotten them on Zoom and I've talked to them. So I'm going to be sharing some of those videos on the website. I've got some articles I want to share. I want a tigerstail.com to be the educational component that's going on all year round, while there's a Tiger's Tail, the graphic novel that people can read for their entertainment. But I mean, there'll be comics on the website too. So, you know, I hope people will check that out. And I want to thank you, Brian, for the chance to just go off on Kung Fu stories, you know,
I love
not just
too.
The comic side, but just these crazy tales. You know, this is what I mean about like tales from the Kung Fu forest, all of these crazy stories about like behind the scenes, you know. What was it like to photograph Lou Reed during a Kung Fu photo shoot? Or, you know, I'll have to tell you about the time the BBC came to our studios to film one of our other Kung Fu masters. You know, it's so many stories, but
that's been mind blowing.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I'll put that one on the website at some point, so you could see it for yourself.
Sounds cool. I look forward to watching it.
Excellent, excellent.
And where can we follow you on social media?
You can, on Twitter, you can find me at Plugo, P-L-U-G-O, all caps. And then on Instagram and most anywhere else online, you can find me at Plugo Arts. So P-L-U-G-O-A-R-T-S. So plugoarts.com. But really, check out atigerstail.com, because that's where all the action's happening right now.
Sounds awesome. Well, Patrick, thank you so much for being on this podcast. And as I always say to all my constant listeners, stay ever so awesome. This is Brian from Earth 16, and
this is Patrick
signing out. Thank you so much. Y'all have a good night.
Thank you.